Thank you, Mr. Fay. Good afternoon to everyone. I like that song that we just had, The Church's One Foundation, because it ties in directly with the title of the second sermon. And the title is Foundations. Foundations. Today I'd like to begin with the end of the Great Flood. Last time, some weeks ago, I talked about lessons from the Great Flood, the days of Noah. And today I'd like to begin with the end of the flood and move on through the account of the Tower of Babel. I think it's very appropriate as we approach the Feast of Trumpets that we talk about foundations. We'll examine how the foundation of Satan's world was reestablished after the flood at Babel. We will then see how God intends to remove that faulty foundation once and for all and establish Jerusalem as his holy city for all eternity. After the flood, of course, and the story of Noah, Noah and his family had an opportunity to start the world over again. They could have tried to do it right. The chaos and the violence of the pre-flood world had been swept away by God, and there were only a very few people. However, the hearts of men and women had not been cleansed, and God had not removed Satan from the earth at that time. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 9. Genesis chapter 9. We'll take a look at verse 1. We see in the story of Genesis that just two or three generations after the flood, the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of Noah returned to the corrupt ways of the pre-flood world. God had intended for the family of Noah to divide up, to go off into several new nations, and to disperse themselves around the world. Genesis 9 and verse 1. So God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Spread out. However, it seems that most of Noah's descendants defied God's instructions, at least at first. They did not want to go and fill the earth. They wanted to stay together. They wanted to decide for themselves what was right and wrong. And God's plan just wasn't appealing to them, just as Adam and Eve had chosen to do at that first foundation of this world, back in the Garden of Eden, to choose for themselves what was right and what was wrong. Let's turn forward to Genesis 10, a few verses down. Genesis 10, look at verse 8. After several of the descendants of Noah's family are delineated, we come across a rather significant character. Genesis 10 and verse 8. Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And that word before, Hebrew panim, P-A-N-I-Y-M, can also mean against. And I think that's probably the more correct meaning here. He was a mighty hunter against the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before or against the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, Calna, and the land of Shinar. And in history books, Shinar is often equated with Sumer, which most textbooks will tell you was the first human civilization. Let's move ahead to Genesis 11, and we'll look at verse 1. Genesis 11. We'll see here that a large portion of Noah's descendants had stayed together, perhaps not all, but a large number of them, and they came down out of the mountain valleys of western Iran, and they came upon the plain of Mesopotamia. And the land was rich. It was good, fertile soil. They could grow a lot of grain there, could support a lot of people. And they reached the Euphrates River, and they devised a plan. Looking at verse 1, Genesis 11. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. So Mesopotamia here is a very flat plain, and there are two great rivers running through it, the Tigris and the Euphrates. It had soil and clay, but no stones. If they were going to build, they were going to have to do so without stones, without rock. So they devised a new strategy. They took the clay, and they shaped it, and they baked it, and they used that for their building material. And they hard-packed the clay on the banks of the Euphrates River, and they started to build atop that base their new civilization, their renewed civilization. Verse 4. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower." Notice there's two things. We always think of the Tower of Babel, but first it's a city and a tower, whose top is in the heavens. "Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." What may at first seem fairly innocent is actually a deliberate defiance of the commands that God had given. God had instructed Noah's descendants to fill the earth, to disperse, to separate themselves into family groups, to settle all around. And notice also in this verse, they determined to make a name for themselves, their own accomplishments. They were filled with pride. Their city and their tower was not going to be dedicated to the glory of God, but to their own pride and arrogance. Let's please turn, well, we'll hold our place here, if you would. We'll come back to Genesis. But let's turn to Acts 17 in the New Testament. Acts 17 and verse 24. Acts 17. Instead of following God's command, this band of Noah's descendants refused to allow God to scatter them. Here in Acts, Paul is addressing the Athenians in Greece. We saw a portion of this in Mr. Fay's first sermon, but we'll read a different part of that speech. Acts 17 and verse 24. Paul says, "God who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands." And we'll see in a few minutes that that tower at Babel was most likely a temple. "He does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth. And this is the key part, God, he has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us." God had already appointed where the descendants of Noah were to settle. And by refusing to go there, they were defying God's plan. They were trying to change the will of God himself. The humans decided that if they banded together, if they worked together, if they could just stick together, they could thwart God. So instead of dispersing, they would build themselves a city. Now, they knew that God had destroyed the world of their ancestors in the days of their grandparents. How could they, like their ancestors, defy the will of God but avoid suffering for it? They have to think this plan all the way through. They've got their city, which they weren't supposed to have yet, but we'll build the tower, right? Whose top is in the heavens, a tower so tall that if God sends another flood, I guess they didn't read the story about the rainbow, if God sends another flood, he couldn't drown them. They'd just go up and stand on the tower. They would, in fact, ascend into the heavens themselves to challenge God. They would build a stairway to heaven. Let's go to Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. In their own way, these human beings were acting out a scene that had already played out before, much, much earlier. It was a scene in which the original defiant one took a stand against the authority of God. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? Lucifer, of course, will become Satan the devil. But originally he was an archangel. How are you fallen from heaven? How are you cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations? For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount or the mountain of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. It's almost the same story, except this time humans are doing it. So let's go back to Genesis 11. We see that Satan's attitude of defiance toward God had clearly infected the minds of Noah's offspring. Now, archaeologists in modern-day Iraq and over the last century and a half have discovered the ruins of mud brick towers, sacred temples scattered all across Mesopotamia. These were constructed like stepped pyramids, and they were built from mud bricks. They had huge ascending staircases up the sides of these pyramids, and they suspect that at the top there was a temple and an altar where sacrifices would be burned, and the altar would also have been made of brick. Now, these temples were known as ziggurats. That's the Mesopotamian word, Z-I-G-G-U-R-A-T, ziggurats. And it's estimated that some reached as high as a 10-story building, the original skyscrapers. Well, there were no mountains in Mesopotamia, so the people built their own. They built their own mountains of brick, artificial mountains, fake mountains, mountains made of clay on a foundation of clay. According to Harper's Bible Dictionary in the article on Babylon, the Chaldean king Nebuchadnezzar undertook the rebuilding of a great ziggurat in Babylon during his lifetime. The new tower at Babylon was dedicated to a god called Marduk. And the name that he gave to the new tower was this, Etam en Anki. And here is the translation, the house that is the foundation of heaven and earth. Right there in the middle of Babylon, the house that is the foundation of heaven and earth. By Nebuchadnezzar's time, of course, the original settlement at Babylon had been long gone. But let's resume the story in Genesis 11 and verse 5 to see why. Genesis 11 and verse 5. But the Lord came down to see the city and, secondly, the tower which the sons of men had built. Now notice that the tower was of secondary interest. He comes first to see the city, to see that they were in defiance of his command not to all settle together. Verse 6, and the Lord said, indeed, the people are one. That's not supposed to be. They're supposed to be many, scattered all around into families, according to my plan. But the people are one. They have all one language, and this is what they begin to do, right? They're already defying me. Now, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So God witnessed against them that they were not obeying the command. So he confused their language. And each branch of Noah's descendants received a unique language for that family's use. And God then compels them to obey his original command, to disperse to the lands that God had predetermined, pre-appointed for their families. Verse 8. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, confusion, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. God had accomplished his original intent, to disperse the families throughout the earth. However, it appears that Nimrod and his family remained in Mesopotamia. And eventually he went right back and finished building a city on the site of Babel, which would become known as Babylon. Nimrod dedicates his life to defying God's will. Let's leave Genesis now, and let's go to Isaiah. Isaiah 65, and we'll start in verse 2. Isaiah 65. Now this passage is not referring to Nimrod or the early Mesopotamians, but the principle in this passage, the principle certainly applies to all who follow in their sinful ways. Isaiah 65. And we'll start in verse 2. This is a message being relayed from God. I have stretched out my hands all day long to a rebellious people who walk in a way that is not good, according to their own thoughts, a people who provoke me to anger continually to my face, who sacrifice in gardens and burn incense on altars of brick. Isn't that interesting? Those who defy God burn incense on altars of brick, made with their own hands, their own creation, their own design, their own skill and cunning. It's interesting to note that God specifically required his people to build altars from stone, not brick. Let's look at that in Deuteronomy 27. Back to Deuteronomy, instructions recorded by Moses. We'll see here that stones are God's handiwork. Bricks are fashioned by men. Bricks are false stones, frauds. They seem strong for a while, but they do not endure like brick does, like rock does. The pyramids of Egypt have survived the ages because they were built from stone. But the ziggurats of Mesopotamia, after thousands of years, have nearly eroded all away from wind, from rain. And the few that can still be seen in Iraq today are the modern constructions on the original bases, done for tourists. Deuteronomy 27 and verse 4. Therefore it shall be, when you have crossed over the Jordan, that on Mount Ebal you shall set up these stones which I command you today, and you shall whitewash them with lime. And there you shall build an altar to the Lord your God, an altar of stones. You shall not use an iron tool on them. They're not even to shape them by their own hand. You shall build with whole stones the altar of the Lord your God and offer burnt offerings on it to the Lord your God. And you shall offer peace offerings and shall eat there and rejoice before the Lord your God. And you shall write very plainly on the stones all the words of this law. There was to be no confusion as to who the sacrifice was for. It was for the one true God. Everything about God's altar was pointing to him. Altars of brick glorify the handiwork of men. And to us, this may at first seem to be a minor point, but God thought it to be of such importance that he clearly includes it in these instructions. The Tower of Babel, the city of Babel, came to stand for chaos because the languages were confounded there. And the word Babel means confusion. The city, once rebuilt, got a new name. It's no longer Babel. It's Babylon. And that word is a rather interesting meaning. It means the gate of God. The whole city was called the gate of God. Now, as I mentioned before, the ziggurat was seen as a stairway to heaven. It was a bridge, or a gateway, if you will, to give men access to heaven on their own terms, under their own efforts. Yet not everyone could climb those steps. Only the priests could ascend the stairs of the artificial mountain. The priests were the gatekeepers, the door of the gate of God in the pagan religious system. Let's go to John 10. John 10, start in verse 1. The priests at Babylon created a false religion, which they ruled over from the steps of their false mountain. And that religion has spread throughout the religions of this world, serving as the foundation of clay for a system opposed to God, a system of worship that at its root is based on the idea that humans can reach heaven through their own efforts. Let's see what Jesus has to say about the real gate of God. John 10 and verse 1. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. Nimrod and his accomplices tried to climb up to heaven another way, not by the way that God had ordained, and they became thieves, stealing the minds and the freedom of countless generations of their followers. Verse 2. But he who enters the door by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. Then Jesus said to them again, most assuredly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they might have life and that they may have it more abundantly. A very different door, a very different gate of God. Let's go to Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18, and look at verses 10 and 11. Proverbs 18. We know that the Tower of Babel was a symbol not only of defiance toward God, but a celebration of human achievement, ingenuity, strength, accomplishment. But when God stepped in to humble men, they scattered, running from the tower that they had labored to build. Proverbs 18, verse 10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. The rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his own esteem. The true tower is strength in the name of the Lord. At Babel, men declared, "Let us make a name for ourselves and build a tower." That's not the source of the true tower. Let's go to Psalm 122. Psalm 122. And we'll start in verse 1. In God's name is the true tower of strength. The Tower of Babel was a false hope, a false promise of salvation. God's true city is going to be built on a much better foundation than that of Babel. It will be founded on more than hardened clay. Etam en Anki. The ziggurat built by Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon on the ruins of the Tower of Babel was never really the house that is the foundation of heaven and earth. It was just a fraud. And in Psalm 122, we'll read of the true house of God, built on a true foundation and established in a far better city than Babylon. Psalm 122 in verse 1. You may recall the song. It's based upon these verses. I was glad when they said to me, "Let us go into the house of the Lord." Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is built as a city that is compact together, where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to the testimony of Israel, to give thanks to the name of the Lord. Notice so far, Babylon's house was broken by God, and its people scattered. In God's city, the tribes will be compacted together, not scattered. They will be gathered together, not to make a name for themselves, but to give thanks to the name of the Lord. Verse 5. For thrones are set there for judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper who love you. Peace be within your walls, prosperity within your palaces. For the sake of my brethren and companions, I will now say, peace be within you. Because of the house of the Lord, our God, I will seek your good. Babylon's gate of God did not lead anyone to salvation. It was a temple, a false house, built atop a fake mountain of clay. Let's go to Psalm 89. Psalm 89, a few pages back. Remember that the foundation of the city of Babel was clay. What serves as the foundation for God's city? Psalm 89 and verse 14. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Mercy and truth go before your face. Blessed are the people who know the joyful sound. They walk, O Lord, in the light of your countenance. In your name, there it is again. In your name they rejoice all day long, and in your righteousness they are exalted, not in their own name. They're not making a name for themselves. They're rejoicing in the name of the Lord. Let's go to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2, and we'll start in verse 19. We remember that Noah's descendants, at least most of them, rejected God. They banded together to form their own system of right and wrong. We must remember, however, that Noah's descendants were our ancestors, and they perished. Our ancestors, immediately after the flood, turned their backs on God and his commandments. Their descendants became strangers to God, alienated. But God has given us the promise of a better way of life, built on a solid foundation, with a better house on top of that foundation. Ephesians 2 and verse 19. Now therefore you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints, and members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. That's the key to our foundation. It's not clay. It's the stone of Christ himself, in whom the whole building, being joined together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. The ziggurat at Babel was a false temple, built in defiance of God. We are to become a part of a holy temple in which God himself will live. Let's go to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. Mr. Fay also danced around my scriptures, but he missed them. So I'll add them now. Hebrews 11, and we'll look at verses 8 through 10. That new temple, of which we will be a part, will be safely located in a city, not a city like Babylon, not made with human hands to celebrate human pride and human arrogance. The descendants of Noah were told by God to go out of their places and to settle in a new land. They refused, defying God's instructions. So God found a man who would do what he told him to do. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place where he would receive an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going, but he went out. He went out. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. Why? He waited for his city. He didn't build his own. He waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Abraham lived in tents, looking forward to the true city of God that would be established, and he would wait for that one. Let's go back to Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 2. We will hear this verse probably several times in the next few weeks, but that's okay. It's a good one. Isaiah chapter 2. We know that God will establish his true holy city in Jerusalem, and there will be a mountain there also. But it's not going to be a fake mountain, built from clay bricks and human lies. It will be a mountain that will endure forever. Isaiah 2 and verse 2. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, all those mountains, natural or unnatural, the kingdoms made by men. and shall be exalted above the hills. And notice what happens when that mountain is there. People are not sent away from it. And all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house, not of the foundation of heaven and earth and Babylon, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. God had scattered the nations from the false mountain. Now he will reverse the flow. In the latter days, the nations will seek out God and his truth at his mountain. Let's go to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. We'll look at verse 31. In those days, people will finally want to obey God. And they will head to his true house, to the true city, at the true mountain, and Jesus Christ, the true gate of God, will open the way for them to enter. God gave the prophet Daniel a glimpse into that future, looking forward to that day when that false system of religion and government that became centered at Babel will finally be obliterated. And Daniel told the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, what would come to pass. Daniel 2, verse 31. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. The great image whose splendor was excellent stood before you, and its form was awesome. The image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away, so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image, he's telling this to the king of Babylon, the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Nebuchadnezzar looks out the window at the one he's building. It's not the same mountain. Let's go to Isaiah 26. Isaiah 26, start in verse 1. Isaiah relates another vision of the end of the Babylonian system. And think about the words he uses in connection with the false foundation. Isaiah 26 and verse 1. In that day, this song will be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. God will appoint salvation for walls and bulwarks. Open the gates, that the righteous nation which keeps the truth may enter in. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for in Yah the Lord is everlasting strength. For he brings down those who dwell on high. The lofty city, he lays it low. He lays it low to the ground. He brings it down to the dust. The foot shall tread it down, the feet of the poor and the steps of the needy. The way of the just is uprightness, O most upright. You weigh the paths of the just. Yes, in the way of your judgments, O Lord, we have waited for you. The desire of our soul is for your name. For your name. And for the remembrance of you. Not to make a name for ourselves. Let's turn briefly to Revelation 3. And we'll just look at verse 12. Revelation 3. What is our role going to be in this true city of God? We all pray that we will be there. But we know that our presence there will not have been because of our own efforts or our own strength or any worthiness on our part. We will not seek to make a name for ourselves, as the families of Babel decided to do. No, the name on our lips that day will not be our own. Revelation 3 and verse 12. He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. And I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name. We will go no more out, no more scattering, no more deceit and deception, no more wars, no more false mountain built on foundations of clay. Let's turn finally to Psalm 118. Psalm 118, and we'll look at verses 19 to 24. In that day, our foundation will be more solid than any foundation that has ever been. And the gate of God that we use to enter God's holy city will be the true path that God intended for his human children from the very beginning. It's good at this time of year to remember that. Psalm 118 and verse 19. Open to me the gates of righteousness. I will go through them, and I will praise the Lord. This is the gate of the Lord, through which the righteous shall enter. I will praise you, for you have answered me and have become my salvation. The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. This is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it.